wherever in the world you are. Welcome to the Health Zone Show with Michal O'Mahuna, where with each episode I explore interesting health and well-being topics with a thought-provoking guest. These topics can range from nutrition, relationships, spirituality, finance, creativity, mental health, and much, much more, so that you can live a healthier, happier, and more authentic life. Guests on the show vary from health experts, spiritual teachers, finance wizards, sports legends, to ordinary people with extraordinary lives. Find us on facebook.com/ The Health Zone Show, or you can also join our Facebook group, The Health Zoners. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest under The Health Zone. Check out our new updated website, www.thehealthzoneshow.com. And at the moment, you can receive a free copy of my latest ebook, 7 Ways to Boost Your Overall Well-Being When You Join The Health Zone. Paving your way for a healthier day, The Health Zone. Today I'm chatting with author, empath, intuitive healer and psychiatrist, Dr. Judith Orloff. Judith is famous for her book, The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. Her work helps empaths understand themselves and offers tools for dealing with their sensitivity. Hello, Judith. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good over here in Ireland. Tell me, Judith, what's an empath?
Ah, that's such a beautiful question. An empath is somebody who is very, very sensitive to noise, smell, sounds, connection, people's energy, nature, and they often have no filters. So they tend to absorb the angst of the world and the stress of other people into their own bodies. So one of the challenges of being an empath, and one of the main topics I talk about in the Empath Survival Guide, is how to be a healthy empath without taking on the stress of the world. That's the main skill set that an empath must learn.
And is there a way to know you're an empath or not?
Yes, there's a 20-question self-assessment test in the beginning of the book. And some of the questions include, have you been labeled as, quote, overly sensitive all your life in a derogatory way? Do you have sensitivity to noise, smells, or excessive talking? Do you get overwhelmed in crowds? Do you prefer being with one or two people or alone? Do you love being out in nature and feel a communion with the natural world? Are you intuitive? And many empaths are extremely intuitive. People I call intuitive empaths, who are able to sense what's going on in other people. And all kinds of synchronicities happen to them. And you might get information about people that comes through non-verbally. And so it's a particular kind of empath. And also empaths have a connection to the earth. You can feel what's happening with the movements of the earth in your own body. And there's also a dream empath, where many empaths are dreamers. Like I'm very much a dreamer. I have been since I've been a little girl, where my dream life is equally important to me as my waking life. And so those are some qualities of an empath.
And Judith, how does being an empath differ, say, from being empathic or sensitive?
Well, empathy is on a spectrum, and you can have the lower end of the spectrum, which are the narcissists and the sociopaths and the psychopaths, who have what are called empathy deficient disorders, meaning they're not neurologically wired to have empathy, which is so hard for empaths to get, but it's very important for them to understand that. They don't have empathy as we know it. And then more in the middle of the spectrum is ordinary empathy, which is so beautiful, where you just, when something happens to a friend, your heart goes out to them. You don't necessarily take on their energy or their sadness, but you feel for them. Or you feel happy when a friend, let's say, has a baby, and they're experiencing the happiness of a baby, you know, or a new book, or whatever celebration a friend is having, and you feel that happiness. And then you go higher up on the spectrum and you have the highly sensitive person. And that's somebody who is very attuned to their senses and tends to get overwhelmed by sensory stimuli, such as too much light, too much sound, smells, crowds. And so that's the highly sensitive person. And then you go up even higher on the spectrum and you get the empath, who has all the attributes of the highly sensitive person, but also has a deeper sense of intuition, you know, into the nature of the universe, into people, and they're emotional sponges, and they tend to absorb a lot. They're very absorbent. You know, I like to describe my empathic abilities. It's like holding something with 50 fingers instead of 2 fingers. It's having all these, you know, extra tendrils to pick up what's happening with a simple rock. Let's say I hold a simple rock in my hand, I'll feel all kinds of things, you know, or if I shake your hand, I will get all kinds of information and get a sense of your energy and who you are. I mean, I don't actually have to shake your hand to do that, but I could feel you. And so empaths are able to do that once they develop their intuition.
And Judith, is it different being an empath, say, with a man and a woman?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? I have an empath support group on Facebook, which everyone is welcome to join, by the way. But most of the people, there are 22,000 empaths in this group, and most of the people who share are women. And occasionally the women will ask, maybe 10% that share are men, and they'll say, where are all the men? And then you get tons of comments. Now, well, we're all here, we're listening. We just don't feel comfortable sharing. And I think that's true in society, that men feel a lot less comfortable sharing about their empathy, their sensitivities, their intuition, because, you know, they've been so bullied and put down as little boys, and they never fit in. No, they didn't want to go to football games or play with video games. They want to go out into the woods for a walk, you know, or read Walt Whitman, you know, or, you know, just enjoy some beautiful music or connect to the animals. They don't, you know, they have a different sensibility set. And so they've been very hurt. And the men tell us, you know, that they're so reluctant that to be mocked or made fun of, or that it's not a strength. And, you know, part of my teaching is to celebrate the sensitive man, of course. You know, sensitive men are where it's at. You know, who wants somebody who isn't sensitive? I don't know very many people who are interested in that. But the men need a little more encouragement to come out. So all of this to say, there may be more women than men, but there are many more men than you would think. They're not just speaking out.
Oftentimes, empaths, they can experience people saying that, you know, you're too sensitive. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, yeah, I get told that all the time. And I've gotten told that since I was a child. I had both my parents were physicians. I have 25 physicians in my family. And so I come from a long lineage of logical, rational, scientific thinkers. And I was a little girl who would feel things or know things or come home after going to the shopping mall and feel totally overwhelmed or anxious or some ache or pain I didn't have before. And I went home to my mother and she said, dear, you know, she's very concerned about me. She loved me. She said, you just have to develop a thicker skin. You're too sensitive, too sensitive. So I grew up believing there was something wrong with me, that I was ashamed of my abilities. And so as I write in my first book, Second Sight, you know, I got very heavily involved with drugs and alcohol as a teenager to try and run from my abilities, to try and shut them off so I could just go to parties with other people, so I could just hang out with my girlfriends without all these, you know, input of energy coming in or input of information. And, you know, it worked in a sense, but It's not the solution. And there's in the Empath Survival Guide, there's a chapter on empaths and addiction. If any of your listeners are struggling with this, because it's very common that empaths feel so sensitive, they need to shut it off with something. And so, you know, it's important to notice that and not go. I'm not saying, not recommending going that route. I'm just saying I went that route. And I had to turn that around by having, you know, guides and therapists who said to me, in order for you to be whole, you need to embrace this part of yourself. And you can't get around it. And so that rang true to me. And so my life path has been integrating the linear scientific world of medicine with my empath self. I haven't discarded my empath self. I use my empath self to treat patients in my private practice. And when I listen to you, when I listen to everyone, I use it and I integrate it. And everyone listening, there is nothing wrong with you. Okay, because empaths many times feel there is something wrong with them. They have to change. And that's not true. There's something right with you. There's never been anything wrong with you. You just have to learn the skills on how to be a healthy, empowered empath.
Oftentimes, the empaths might feel overwhelmed, and they're, especially with people who may not be as sensitive to their needs and them being an empath. Is there a way to protect oneself in that situation?
Yes. The Empath Guide is full of strategies I use in my life and that I teach my patients and my workshop participants, you know, how to survive as a healthy empath. And one thing you can always do is if you're in an environment that's uncomfortable for you, you can practice visualization where you visualize a protection of white light or pink light or some kind of barrier between you and your environment. Let's say you're around people who are toxic, or you're in a business meeting that just is going downhill and you're quite uncomfortable with it. You can picture, no one will know what you're doing, picture this protective shield around you so that you won't actually feel the toxic energy of what's going on. And you'll be able to sit there in a safe, quiet zone until you're able to leave. So that's one. The shielding technique is one strategy. Another strategy that empaths really need to learn is setting boundaries with people. As empaths have a hard time saying no, and they want to help everybody. You know, they're very giving, loving people typically, and they just want to help everyone, and they overhelp. And they get exhausted, they make themselves sick, and then they never want to go out of the house again because they're so overwhelmed. And so it makes sense, but you don't want to get to that place where you're so overwhelmed, you just don't want to see anybody again. You know, occasionally you'll feel that way. And at those times, you just rest, regroup, take some alone time, meditate. So I'm a big believer in meditation to center yourself and come back to yourself. But you also have to set boundaries with people. You have to learn how to say no. As empaths always say yes. You know, yes, I'm exhausted. I just came home from a long day of work. Sure, I could come over and walk your dog because you're not feeling well. You know, sure, I could do this. And it's all well-meaning, but sometimes you have to say, I am so sorry. I'm just unable to do it. I have to practice self-care now. You have to learn the word no in your vocabulary. You cannot get away with not doing it. And you can't. It won't work. You will be a miserable empath if you can't say no. Or set a positive boundary. You can say no in a very positive way. You know, saying, I wish I could do this. I wish I could help you with your project. But I'm just overloaded with my own work right now. So I'm not able to do it. I'm so sorry. You know, and to say it lovingly. When you set a boundary, you say it lovingly. You don't say it angrily, like, how could you ask me? Can't you see I'm so busy with this project, my own? You know, you don't say that. You come from a very loving spot when you set a boundary. And people aren't used to that because their early parental upbringing usually kind of nasty exchanges with boundaries. And so it's not a pleasant memory if you see your parents trying to set boundaries and one yells at the other and then a big fight ensues and you're sorry you ever mentioned anything. But what I'm suggesting is coming from a loving place and perhaps, you know, talking to yourself a little bit, having inner dialogue before you actually set the boundary with somebody, to practice with a friend, or I know my patients practice with me. And sometimes, you know, when they're trying to set a boundary, it's very hard for them and they can't get it out. You know, it gets stuck in their throat. They can't get it out. And that's fine. Try it, you know, take a breath. Let's try it again. And so they practice beforehand. So they have some experience. So when you actually go to the person, you know what you're doing and you know what you want to say. And I just want to tell everyone that sometimes you do have to repeat yourself. And it's just because people are not used to you setting boundaries, probably. And so they might not respect it on the first shot, but you just have to remind them, you know, and not just be totally resentful they're still doing it. And just tell them, I'm so sorry, I can't do it. No, but I know your project's going to turn out great. No, I'm rooting for you. I can't do it. So it's about using the tone of voice that I'm using right now, if everyone could pay attention to that, you know, rather than nasty, snippy, angry, mad, because that won't work. That will just alienate people.
Thanks, Judith. And is there a way to know what your boundaries actually are?
Yes, you have to talk to yourself and say, what feels comfortable for me? Do I want to go out to the social situation tonight? How am I feeling? And you check in with yourself. And if you check in and you go, oh, I think it would be fun. This would be great. I'm going. So then you go. You know, or you might get, I'm not in the mood really to be around people and I'm just doing it to please this person whose birthday it is. Maybe I'll just go and show up, say hi for about 10 minutes and then take off. You know, that's an option. Or you could just not go, depending on the event. You know, of course, if it's your sister's wedding, it's going to be a little hard to beg out. But no, it is called I've heard it called to leave with tactfulness. It's called the French exit, learning how to make the right exit at the right time so that people feel good about your visit and people feel good about you leaving. And, you know, it's just how you do it with level of heart that you communicate. That's usually makes the situation so much better because you're giving off a lot of heart energy when you go and you're saying no, you know, or even you're calling and saying, you know, I just can't do it. You know, I'm so sorry. And that's okay. Sometimes you can't do it. You see, empaths need to learn that. It's hard for empaths. Are you an empath?
Oh, I'm 100% an empath.
Oh.
Yes. Uh-huh. I'm learning the hard way. Yeah.
Oh, as most people do, they learn the hard way. Yeah, that's true. And so it just depends. Tone of voice is key. When you're an empath and you're trying to communicate something that might disappoint someone, you know, that you're not able to do something for somebody. The tone of voice, your eyes, the way your eyes look, the way your body posture is, you know, it all makes a difference in how the no is received. And you have to practice. And you know what I've seen so many times over the years is that empaths practice with the hardest person first. Like they go to their mother or their father. And that's not the right thing to do. You don't want to practice with them first. You want to practice with the easiest person first. So you could have more likelihood of success.
Judith, on that, the boundary side of things, like how important is it to listen and trust your intuition in regard to boundaries?
Extremely important. Intuition is the still small voice inside all of us that will tell us the truth about things. It will tell us the truth about what your needs are, what you truly need now, not who you want to be or who you hope you could be, but what you truly need now. And your intuition is a feeling in your gut, which tells you, I always teach empaths and all of my patients how to discern an intuitive yes, an intuitive no. Or yes, my yes would feel like my stomach relaxes in terms of my gut feelings. I feel energy. I feel happy. I feel like there's a door opening. And an intuitive no feels like I've hit a brick wall, or I'm feeling depressed or sinking or tired or forcing something. And so I've learned the signs of what intuitive yes and intuitive no is. And I think it would be a good idea if everyone could experiment with that so you know. But you have to remember to ask yourself in the situation, what does my intuition tell me? And it's also extremely important when you're assessing people. Now, if you're thinking about getting involved with a business arrangement with this particular person, and they sound great, they look great, but something inside of you is saying, I'm not comfortable here, then what do you do? You know, I hope you at least are cautious and you don't just say yes right away, that you get to know the person a little bit more. If you get a no or a sick feeling in your stomach, even though everyone likes this person, or everyone, you know, or the deal sounds fantastic and you're feeling sick in your stomach, just pause, you know, because nearly every time that I've seen people, or I've gone against my intuition and just gone for something like that that looks so good because I wanted it to be true or I wanted it to happen, never worked out. And it can be disastrous consequences if you don't listen, depending on the situation.
Could it bring on health issues or even diseases in a person's body for not trusting their yes and their no?
Oh, yes. The body is an intuitive receptor, and the body will keep giving you information. Now, whatever you're feeling, let's say you're feeling tired. That is really important information. It's not just something to push through all the time. The body is tired. You lay down on your bed, you close your eyes, and you rest. Now, it sounds pretty simple, but it's very hard for people to do that, as they just push and go, and children and work and, you know, partners and husbands and wives and events and Zoom meetings. You know, there's so many things that could make people tired, too tired. You want to lead a long life and a long, happy, healthy life. And that means self-care. And part of self-care is listening to your intuition about how you're feeling today. You know, how are you feeling? What do you need? And beginning to honor that. And it's hard for empaths sometimes to put themselves first. You know, to say, how am I feeling? What is the truth of how I'm feeling? And how can I honor that? And let's say you do have a big day and you have to go through, you know, all these, you know, whatever you're doing, but just get home. When you get home, now what I do is I turn on my bathtub, I shut the door, I get in water, I begin to relax and let go of the energy of the day, and I try and come back to my baseline, now, which is feeling good. So everyone who's listening has to determine what brings you back to yourself. And sometimes empaths can go on sensory overload. And that means too much is coming at you too fast. And it's a very painful state if you've never gone through it. But I assume if, you know, the empaths out there have felt this, it's just too much. So if you're ever feeling that, you must stop immediately. Decrease stimulation and begin to come back to your center. And you can do that through meditation, through deep breathing, through quieting your environment. You don't want excessive stimulation when you're in that point. You don't want people asking you things or requests being made or you having to get on phone calls. That's a dangerous situation. If you continue past sensory overload, this, your body can get sick. Your body can react, you know, with stress responses. You know, you could get stomach aches or headaches or chronic fatigue. If you don't listen long enough, your body may react in a way that causes dis-ease. So intuition allows you to not get into the dis-ease area because you're listening to yourself. You're listening to other people. You're listening to how this relationship is for you. You're listening to where you're happy. You're listening to where you're not. So this is all empath training.
Can childhood trauma or even trauma and other types during our lives, can it disconnect us from that knowing, that intuition?
Trauma, yes. Yeah, sometimes trauma can happen from disconnecting to your intuition. And sometimes it can exacerbate the downside of being an empath. You know, the trauma that comes from, let's say, parents who are alcoholic or parents who are neglectful or abusive, or you weren't grown up, you weren't raised in an environment which was nurturing. Let's say they were arguing all the time, or they didn't give you enough attention, or they didn't honor who you were, or it was a chaotic household. Now, all that, you know, can cause trauma in a little being, you know, depending on how old you are. And babies certainly are wide open to energy and pick up everything. So don't think they don't. You know, they're just alive beings and they will respond. And so empaths often you know, have that chronic sensory overload since childhood. And that's a form of trauma that can affect you in terms of your mental health, in terms of your confidence and your self-esteem. And it's important, you know, if all this has happened to you, I mean, that's fine. Trauma has happened to many empaths, so don't get too frightened by it. But you need to begin to shift now, wherever you are in your life, whatever age you're at, it's never too late to open up to being an empath and beginning to honor yourself in that way. And I've worked with people of all ages, like little ones, old ones. And one recently that was 92 who came to me, a woman who said she just decided or found out she was an empath. Is it too late for me? And I go, no, of course not.
And Judith, is there a way for empaths to stop absorbing other people's emotions, stress, and problems?
Yes, that's the whole point. If I went around absorbing people's emotions all the time, I would be a wreck. I wouldn't be able to function as a psychiatrist. I wouldn't be able to function as a partner or a friend. It's just not a healthy way to be. And plus, everyone has to realize that when you take on, let's say, your mate's emotions because they're so stressed out, or if you take on the world's angst because there's so much suffering, you know, in a war-torn region of the world, you know, if you do all that, it's not going to help them at all. You know, it's not going to help them, and it's not going to help you. It's going to make two miserable people. You know, so what you can do in the situation of war or oppression, or in all of the horrible things that are happening in our world today, you could send them beautiful heart energy in the quiet of your meditation space, or just sitting on your couch, or sitting outside in nature. You just feel good feelings about them, loving feelings, and just ask for it to be sent to them, or pray for them. And that will do more good than anything, than you suffering. If you can send people good energy, that energy knows where to go. You don't have to worry about it. It travels far and wide. It doesn't matter the other side of the globe. It doesn't matter to that energy. It's the energy of love, basically. And you want to send that to people. And how they'll receive it, it's interesting that suddenly they'll go, I suddenly feel better. They don't know why. But I'm sure it's because of the good energy that we send them. You know, it's a little boost. You want to give them a little boost for everything they've been through and are going through. You see, that's more healthy than you taking it on and being miserable. You being miserable isn't going to help them. So I hope you believe me. No, I'm not sure everybody always believes that, but I hope you believe me that that's true. And if you truly want to do some good, you start with yourself as an empath, and you get yourself comfortable, and you deal with your own suffering, and you can send out these positive messages to people, positive prayers, positive energy. There's nothing wrong with that, because that doesn't take anything out of you. That only gives to your body, and it gives to other people without taking. All right, that's a beautiful way to help people. And don't think that it's doing nothing. It's doing something really powerful. So how not to take on the energy of other people? You have to realize that fact, and that a lot of people are brought up with the idea that compassion means that you're a martyr and that you take on everybody's stuff. No, and that is not compassion to me. I mean, you can be a martyr if you want to be a martyr and work with that archetype in your lifetime. That's fine. But that's not what I'm talking about. And it's a very painful path, by the way. But some people choose it. They like to be martyrs. And that's what they're learning from, hopefully. But if you want to be a healthy empath, if you want to make changes in the world, if you want to make changes in your life, if you want to have loving friendships and loving relationships, and that's not the way to do it. That's not the way to do it. The way to do it is to begin to self-heal, to listen to your intuition. Now, as you keep bringing up, now listen to your intuition every day. And know that your empathy is a beautiful thing, but you have to decide how you want to give it and who you want to give it to. You can't give it to everyone. Empathy doesn't mean helping everyone. It doesn't. No, it just doesn't. We're not made that way as human beings. And so when I reach my limit, which I do, it's different every day. That's the thing. You know, you can make general rules about how you want to behave, but you see, my energy is different every day, so I have to make tweaks on what feels good and what doesn't feel good. And I listen to my intuition every day, and I at least do a little bit of meditation in the morning to come back to myself, what's really important before my mind takes over, you know, throughout the day. And then I always meditate at night to bring myself back to my heart. You know, if it's strayed, come back to my heart and tune into more cosmic things. You know, get away from this worldly experience we're having here, and begin to feel some other realities that are also present in our lives. You know, which has to do with looking up at the stars and the sky and feeling your place in the universe, this magnificent universe. That's important to me, because you don't want to be too much of this world. You know, you want to be somewhat of this world, but not your whole self.
And how important is grounding and earthing for an empath?
Extremely important. And for those of you who don't know what grounding and earthing is, it's a way for your feet to touch the earth, or your body to touch the earth, so that you can feel the grounding that could come from the natural energies. And if the weather is permitting, you can go barefoot, you know, in the grass or in a field or in anywhere, or in the sand if you are near sand and beach. But it's to begin to feel the grounding, the earthing that can happen. And if you're not if it's freezing out, and you can't go outside, you can picture grounded spots like beautiful forests or beautiful hillsides or a favorite mountain of yours that you like to go, or a favorite tree that you like to sit next to. And you can bring all that about from the inside, and that will help you ground. And sometimes holding on to rocks, you know, stones is helpful too. It has the feeling of the earth to them, the stones. They, you know, some people call them worry stones. It's a way to make them more less woo-woo. You know, worry stones, you can hold on to them and not worry. But that they're essentially grounding. grounding you and bringing you back. Grounding means getting out of your head. You know, you're being up in your head is not grounding, and being in your head too much, extremely painful. And it can be a place of your own personal suffering if you think too much. So you want to come to your heart, which is the loving kindness within you. You want to, when you're grounding yourself, when you're centering yourself, you want to center yourself here. This is the part of you that is warm and understanding and connected to all the creatures and all the people, and just feeling, you know, in union with this experience here. And being able to direct your heart to yourself and show yourself empathy. Self-empathy is often the hardest thing for people, where you can empathize with your friends, you can empathize with strangers you don't even know, but people can't empathize with themselves. They're so hard on themselves. And I know that because I've sat with people for over 30 years as a psychiatrist, me in one chair, them in another chair, and I see beat, 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 you know, and then a patient goes out, new patient comes in, beat, beat, beat. So it's very common if you beat yourself up, very common. People do. That the healing, and if you're an empath, the healing is to beat yourself up less a little bit each day. That's progress. And learning how to come back to your heart, ground yourself in your heart, and be loving with yourself. You did a good job today. Now, it was a tough situation. Maybe you didn't get what you wanted, but you did a good job. You did your best. Bravo. You know, begin to speak to yourself like that, as opposed to, you're so stupid, you should have done this, why didn't you do that, you know, what's wrong with you, you know, that kind of destructive thinking and talking, self-talk that you, if you have it, you want to stop it right away. You say, no, that's not the right direction to go. You always want to be loving with yourself, even if you made a mistake, even if you did something you wish you could change. You know, but you want to, all right, I did something I'm not proud of. You know, let me, first of all, connect to myself. And then secondly, how can I make an amends to this person? No, so you work with it, but you don't just beat yourself up and leave it at that. That's not, it's going to lead to a very unhappy life.
I was actually out today walking bare for about half an hour. I was getting a couple of funny looks.
Was the weather warm?
It's actually warm, strangely enough, in Ireland, because we can get a lot of rain over here as well.
When I was in Ireland, I walked barefoot.
Were you on the grass or on the beach?
I was on the grass.
Oh, nice. Yeah, fantastic. Especially if there's a little bit of water on the grass, they say it's even slightly better because you're getting that connectivity to the earth in with the water. And
Yes. And I gave a workshop in Dublin, and we looked out on the Irish Sea, which is so beautiful. And the sea, it grounds me. I mean, if you could get near that water, you know, and just look at it, that's grounding. So wherever you live, you have to use your own landmarks to find the grounding.
Are there any certain work environments or types of work the empaths are more suited to?
Yes. There's a chapter in the Empath Guide on empaths and work. Empaths typically don't like being in a politically charged environment in the office. They're not good with office politics. And so with many empaths, especially since the new arrangement with work, and people often work at home now, at least in the U.S., you know, they can have more of a choice about taking some time off and maybe going to their bed and resting, and then they can have more say about how they spend their time. So it's easier for a lot of empaths to work virtually. And do you have that option in Ireland?
They've kind of done a hybrid option in a lot of workplaces here now, where you can work 2 or 3 days from home and have maybe 2 days in the office. It works quite well for people who are empaths, but even who have families as well can be quite helpful.
Yes. Oh, I'm glad that option is there. It makes life a lot easier for empaths. But I want to say that empaths can be introverted and extroverted. No, I happen to be an introverted empath, though very quiet. But not all people, not all empaths are like me. You know, some are much more social and they have to really decompress afterwards. And their work environment choices might be a little different. If you're an extroverted empath, you might like to go in. You might like to talk to all the people and have a community there in person. All right. But introverted empaths would do better working at home. They tend to like being their own bosses and not have to report to anybody. They like being able to navigate from home and go and have client meetings at a restaurant or at an outside office and then go back to their home. So they're just not stuck in an environment, as the office politics is very hard. And then working for, you know, listening to the public is very hard for empaths. You know, I have had workshop participants over the years who've worked in, you know, we have stores called Home Depot, which are big, you know, home stores where you can get plants and, you know, all kinds of shovels and equipment. And they work as cashiers. And it's very rough because the public isn't very nice to them. No, and it's often they have to encounter a lot of nastiness, a lot of chaos. And so working with the public is not a great job for an empath. But empaths often like being healthcare professionals and creatives. You know, there are a lot of empaths I've treated who are actors, producers, directors, artists, visual artists, designers. No, they tend to gravitate toward the creative professions and also the healthcare professions, though they're prone to get burnout unless they learn some skills not to take on the stress of their patients, because they tend to overwork a lot and schedule patients back to back. And if there are any healthcare practitioners out there, please put breaks between your patients or clients. Please don't just go back to back. That's the worst thing for an empath. Now give yourself a break. Take a breath. Set one client aside. Center yourself. Welcome the next client in. So they go into healthcare professions. They often like, you know, ecology jobs or working with marine life or nurseries. And bad jobs for empaths are just ones that have too much hustle and bustle, too much going on, too many, you know, like working on Wall Street wouldn't be exactly a great job for an empath. There's too much backstabbing going on all the time. And that would be very, you know, they'd take it personally. So it wouldn't really work out well for them to have a job like that. But let's say being a personal finance person, just having your own business, that would be better. If you have more control over it. But a lot of anger and backbiting and ill will and manipulation in any place where there are a lot of narcissists, or in politics, terrible for empaths, unfortunately, you know, because we need them in politics desperately. But they usually don't gravitate. The narcissists usually gravitate towards politics because they want the power. Empaths aren't that interested in power, they're more interested in love and connection.
I think you mentioned there that like some empaths can burn out and even experience compassion fatigue. Is there a way to prevent this when working?
Oh, yes. Well, it gets down to you have to reevaluate your attitudes as an empath. Is it your job to absorb the stress of every coworker who wants to share their problems with you? No, I hope the answer is no. I hope after listening to this show, you're at least reevaluating that approach, because empaths, let me tell you, they wear an invisible sign around them that says, I can help you. And people flock from near and far and tell you their problems. Everyone tells you their problems. So if you're at work and you're just minding your own business, someone will come over and tell you their problems. That's just how it is. Because you have a very compassionate heart and they sense that about you. And so you have to learn how to handle that, because you can't listen to everybody's problems, because you'd be too tired. You'd never be able to get through your work. And so you have to have some rote responses, you know, whereas, oh, I'm so sorry that's happening to you. I'll hold you, you know, in my thoughts, you know, as opposed to, oh, really? Tell me more. What you don't want to do is ask more questions with people who are peripheral. Empaths get themselves into trouble by asking too many questions all the time. You know, if someone says, oh, I had a horrible time with my husband, you know, you go, oh, really? What happened? You don't want to say that. You want to say, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, and leave it at that. And so you don't want to probe too much. And so that compassion fatigue happens when you ask too many questions and get too many answers and you're sitting there listening. You might as well be a psychiatrist all the time if you do that. You know, you could just sit and listen to people. But you know, I'm telling you though, I limit who I listen to and I limit how many patients I see and how long I listen. And you know, I really do a lot of time management so I don't experience compassion fatigue. And so I enjoy the rush of compassion, which can come when you have good boundaries. You see, compassion's a beautiful thing, but when it's just a spigot that you can't turn off and you're giving it to everyone who asks you for it, you're going to be tired. And so to avoid compassion fatigue, it's up to you who you want to listen to and for how long. It's up to you, and you're not being a bad person by setting a limit. You know, that's essential for empaths to set limits, as we talked about earlier, to say no with love. And it's not your job to be somebody's therapist. It's a terrible way to start a relationship, you know, where you're the therapist. Oh, let me tell you this. So they're always texting you the next blow by blow drama that happens in their relationship. You don't want that. You want to put a stop to that. You see, and empaths have to get used to this. This is maybe the hardest part of being an empath, is realizing that you give on your own terms, basically. I mean, sometimes you have to give and it's a sacrifice. Let's say, you know, a loved one gets very ill and you're with them and you give and it's draining you and you stay there, you know, of course. But you have to take care of yourself in those situations too, where you have to take a little bit of time off and meditate or exercise or walk in the woods and then go back with the loved one again. So, but in most cases, you have the right to say no. You have the right to set the limits.
Thanks, Judith. And can it be difficult for empaths to find a suitable mate in relationships?
Yes, that's a great question. There's a chapter in the book on empath and love. And empaths often have pattern of attracting narcissists. And it's something to really look at. You know, do you attract people who are narcissistic? Do you attract people who are unavailable and they're never around for you? Those are patterns that empaths can get in that can stop you from having healthy relationships. But there are various kinds of people who can be great partners for empaths. And it just depends on what your needs are. You know, for instance, my partner is not an empath and he doesn't have the sensitivities that I have. And I am thrilled about that, as being with somebody else who had all the sensitivities and nuances of the way I perceive the world. That would be too much for me. I don't want that. And we were driving in the car the other day and I said, oh, I don't know why I asked him this. I go, what are you feeling? And he looked at me, he goes, I'm not feeling anything. I'm driving the car. And that's very different than empaths are driving the car and feeling the little dogs walking, you know, by and the trees. And I mean, they're focused on driving, but they're also quite aware of their environment. And for a non-empath, which I love, it's like, I'm just doing what I'm doing. I'm focused on this. What are you talking about? What am I feeling? So I like that personally, but you might not. It's called the rock. I go through the different types of relationships in the book. You could get involved with another empath. You can get involved with what I call a rock, somebody who's strong and steady and responsible, but may not be as emotionally connected as you are. And then you can get involved with what I call a gusher, somebody who just loves to talk, 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 talk. And if you like that in a partner, then it's perfect. If you like to have these long talks all the time, but some people might not. So it just depends on who you like. And sometimes empaths are good with intellectuals. And intellectuals are people who are pretty much in their minds, not so much in their body, not so much in their heart, though they can be very good people. But they think about things a lot and they want to offer solutions very quickly. You know, when you're going through something, you know, you're so upset about whatever you're upset about, they'll click in the solutions right away. And that could be irritating because an empath, for those who are listening, who are intellectuals, you don't want to offer solutions too quickly because an empath will interpret that as you're not hearing me. You know, you're just wanting to fix it. So the solution to that would be just hear the empath out, maybe 10 minutes, I don't know. And then you can ask them, are you looking for a solution? See, you don't just offer solutions to try and fix it. Intellectuals are often fix it kind of people. They want to fix it right away. And the empath is not ready to fix it yet when the empath is into their feelings. So these are all relationship nuances that you can read about and practice, you know, with your beloved.
What are your thoughts about two empaths being in a relationship together?
Can two empaths? Yes. Some people, that's a preference where they love being with another empath because the advantages are you don't have to reinvent the wheel. They get where you're coming from. You know, they get why you're feeling how you're feeling. The only problem is if you're both triggered at the same time, it can exacerbate the stress level in the household. And so what I always recommend for two empaths living together at those times when you're both triggered and upset to go your own directions, don't go to each other to work it out. So you're both not in a state to do that. So you need to go to someone else, have a therapist, have friends that you can trust and talk to, but don't go to that person right away because it can become very, very incendiary and blow up. So there are pros and cons to different personality types that you might want to get involved with. But just notice, you know, you had brought up intuition. Notice who you intuitively feel the safest with. Now, that's a good sign. Who do you feel most comfortable with? Who do you feel the safest with? The intellectual, the empath, the gusher, the rock? What type? And then just stay aware of that type in your life. And don't write them off too quickly if you're not immediately attracted to them. Because if you're comfortable with them, the attraction can grow.
How can parents recognize and nurture empathic abilities in their children?
That's a beautiful question. I feel very strongly about that because when you have a little empath, you might have a baby empath. I've delivered babies before. And when you've seen babies, you see how they have really different temperaments. Now, some are born very sensitive. They come out of the womb and their little hands are feeling the environment. You know, and others are like a bullet that come out, you know, ready to run that corporation right away. You know, you can just tell. And so they have different temperaments and parents need to look at the temperament of their child. And if they're not an empath, that's fine. I'm not at all presenting this as empaths are better than other types. That's not my message. My message is that it's one way to be that's been overlooked and put down and not validated. And so if you're not an empath, it's beautiful. It doesn't matter. It just, I'm talking about empaths so that everyone else knows about them and that empaths can validate themselves. You know, and children grow up with different temperaments too. Some children are very social. You know, they love all the play dates. They love a lot of activity. But empath children, you know, they need more alone time. They might want to write in their journal or be with their imaginary friend. Or take a walk in the woods, you know, or if you have a gathering in your house, they might want to sit on the stairs and kind of look at it rather than go into the gathering. And that's fine. You want to just let them do their thing. There's nothing wrong with that. And so parents need to just notice the temperament, the natural temperament of their child, and don't try and make them into something they aren't. And if you're lucky enough to have an empath child, you could, from a very early age, begin to validate their intuition. You know, if they say, oh, mommy, I feel so horrible at school. This person is, you know, putting me down. And you could tell them how to ground themselves and how to center themselves and how not to be reactive and how to find friends who are like them. If there are, hopefully there are friends that are like them. And you want to encourage your empath child and not ever say you're overly sensitive. That's not a good phrase to use. You want to encourage their gifts and you want to encourage their strong points. And so you don't want to make your empath child like the other children. You want to see the beautiful gifts of the empath child and help them to manage them and to make the most of them in their lifetime.
I know you spoke earlier as well, Judith, about the connection between empaths and narcissists. Could you delve into why this dynamic actually occurs and how can empaths protect themselves from these types of people?
Yeah, this is a big topic, so we won't have enough time to get into the depth. I have a workshop on my website, The Toxic Attraction Between Empaths and Narcissists, if you want to go into it in more detail, because it's an issue. It's an issue with empaths because empaths and narcissists are often attracted to one another. The empath, of course, is the giving, loving, supportive presence that a narcissist would love. And the narcissist initially often puts on a fake front to appear empathic and to read you and what's important to you and shower you with attention and make you feel like they're your soulmate or your, you know, perfect boss or perfect friend. And then they reel you in. And narcissists, as I've said before, have empathy deficient disorder. So that, you know, it's not real, but the false front is not real. And so once you get hooked in, you know, they can become cold, withholding, punishing. They could gaslight you, make you think you're crazy. What do you mean you reacted that way? That's insane. You know, they might say something like that to you, where you're saying, I need my needs met. I need you to hear me. What? You're insane. You're selfish. You know, they'll say things that's called gaslighting, that are very destructive. No, and then that beats down the empath's self-esteem, which isn't good. And narcissists are very hard to get away from. And I've worked with many patients over the years where it takes them quite a bit to say no and say, this is over. This is over, because the narcissist can reel you back in and make you feel like you're the most important person in the world again. And there you are off and running. So it's hard to get away from a narcissist. Usually the best way to do it is cold turkey, where you just leave. And if you don't have children, if you don't have any overlapping business arrangements, it's a lot easier that you just leave and don't answer their texts. But if you have the overlapping entanglements, then you have to limit your contact with them as best as you can. And you have to move on, turn around and move on with your life in a different direction. The narcissist can never give you love. So that's just a short summary. And that's hard for empaths to accept, because they feel that if they give to the narcissist and love the narcissist, they could help heal all their wounds. And I haven't seen it happen that way.
What advice do you have for those who aren't empaths and want to understand and support the empaths in their lives?
Yes, that's beautiful. Listen to them. Don't put them down. Encourage their gifts. That's so amazing that you said that. You know, that perception is amazing. Or I love that you love nature so much. I love going out on walks with you. You know, so encourage their strong points. And when they set a boundary with you, be aware it's very hard for them, or might be, to set the boundary and to just go along with it. Thank you for telling me your feelings. You know, if they say, you know, I won't be able to go with you, you know, to this event tonight because I'm too tired. Oh, and you could say, oh, I'm disappointed, of course, but, you know, I thank you for honoring your own feelings and taking care of yourself. So you want to encourage the empath, all the things they do for themselves that are positive. And if you're an empath, you can have a lot of fun with another empath and, you know, have a kindred spirit, you know, which is great. I have a number of empath friends, you know, where it's just fun. It's just fun. And it opens up into creativity. It opens up into, you know, just wonderful walks by the ocean, you know, with an empath. It's just, you could feel a lot, and it's fun. I want to leave this conversation with the idea that it's a gift being an empath. Now, I wouldn't give it up for the world. Certainly as a psychiatrist, I can integrate my empathic self with my scientific knowledge and use it to help people. I mean, what's better than that to me? You know, that makes me happy. And I've seen so many people get help. So just know that whatever profession you're in, you can integrate it with what you're doing. The mind and the heart, they go well together.
Do you have any questions or anything you'd like to say before we finish today?
No, if people want to reach me, you could go to my website, which is drjudithorloff.com. And I have an empath support newsletter that I send out once a month with tips and tricks about how to stay an empowered empath. So you could sign up for that on my website. And I just want to thank you for inviting me on your beautiful show. And I've loved our conversation.
I did too, Judah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for listening to another inspiring and thought-provoking show of The Health Zone. I'm Mihalo Mahuna. Just to remind you, you can find us on facebook.com/ The Health Zone Show, or you can join our Facebook group, The Health Zoners. We're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest under The Health Zone. To gain further invaluable resources on health and well-being, go to our website, www.thehealthzoneshow.com. When you're on there, join the Health Zone and you'll receive a free copy of my latest ebook, 7 Ways to Boost Your Overall Well-Being. Finally, I would love to hear any feedback you may have on the show, and even if there are any particular guests or topics which you're interested in, please email me on tunein@thehealthzoneshow.com. Until next time, this is Michal. Thanks for listening, and I wish you a very healthy, happy, and authentic week.